This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Shiurim is really one long shiur that takes a number of years to complete, if they ever get completed. And that over these years, we very often treat subjects which have been treated before, and each time an additional stroke of paint is added onto the canvas of that particular subject, so that over the years one's appreciation of this, of the subject, becomes rounded. The subject of this evening, shir, is Emunas Chachomim. One has to trust Chachomim. One has to trust the Gedolei Yisrael. And that's a Chiyuv Doraisa. That's an obligation of the Torah. For somebody to say, yes, he accepts the Torah, he even accepts the Shulchan Aruch, Rambam, the great Achronim. But today we don't have that kind of thing. You don't have to listen to anybody today. Or somebody who says, yeah, accept the Chumash, the Gemara, that's not all of it. That person is not accepting the Chumash either, is not accepting the Torah either. Because one of the mitzvahs of the Torah is Al pi ha-Toiro asher yorucho ve'al ha-mishpot asher yoimru lecho ta'ase. You shall do according to the Torah and according to the laws which they shall teach you. Your source of knowledge is them, the Chachomim. It's not, we don't learn it in the books. You don't pick up a manual or a Chumash or a Gemara and learn yourself. The source is Al pi ha-Torah asher yorucho ta'aseh. It's by the Torah which they teach you. That's how you have to act. Lo yisosur min hadover asher yagidu lecho yomin usmud. You may not depart from what they tell you, the Chachomim of each generation, right or left. Rashi brings the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Afilu imelecho al yamin shu smol val smol shu yamin. Even if they tell you that your right hand is your left hand and your left hand is your right hand. V'chol shchein k'shu imelecho al yamin yamin val smol smol. And how much more so when they tell you correctly that your right hand is your right hand and your left hand is the left hand. That means if the Gedolei Yisrael would get together and have a convention and come out with a psak, that everybody's putting on that tefillin on the wrong hand. Everybody thinks this is the left hand, this is the left hand, and everybody must from henceforth change the hand on which they put the tefillin, we would do it immediately. And it's the nature of that Emunas Chachomim, and the source of that Emunas Chachomim, that we're going to try and understand in our brief shiur this evening. We've often spoken about a difficult concept called Hishtalshus. Hishtalshus means that everything in this world, all material objects, are not just in this world. Every material object, every aspect of this world has its roots in the upper worlds of the Ribbono Shel Olam as well. And this is a reflection of a reflection of a reflection of a reflection of that. And imagine a system of mirrors that you have a candle, a light, in one room, and with a system of mirrors you're able to reflect it from one mirror to the next, and until it goes around all sorts of corners, and you land up being able to provide light in another room a long way away. Is it the same quality of light that you've got at the source? No. But if you put out that light at the source, you put out the light at the end. So Hishtalshulus, the one it links to the other, the one flows out from the other. The only difference is here that in the physical sense, in the example that I've just given, you can't affect the original light by changing anything with the last one. If you take the mirror away, or you dirty the mirror, or you break the mirror, it doesn't affect the original candle. Whereas this kind of Hishtalshulus which we're describing works backwards as well. And if I move the sefer, something is happening in all the worlds, the links go all the way back, and this sefer has at its source some kind of concept which is its counterpart in the spiritual worlds of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's a little bit of Kabbalistic information for you. That applies not only to objects. It applies not only to things, it applies also to concepts. That the concepts that we use in this world and that we work with in this world all have their sources in the Ribbono Shel Olam spiritual world. And these concepts are merely hishtalshelus, they're reflections of the original concept in all its purity. And the same relationship exists, just as you can reflect and reflect and reflect and reflect, and you can bring the light all the way to the distant room, but the quality of light is not the same, yet it's the same light being reflected. So it is with the concepts of Torah, with the concepts that we use. They're all concepts which have been reflected down from the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. And usually it's necessary to have an understanding of the concept in God's terms in order to understand it physically. Rabbi Yeruchim gives a beautiful example. Rashi says in Bereishis, before, on Friday afternoon, of the first Friday afternoon, just before Shabbos, Ma hayoha ilum chase, what was the world lacking? Rashi is asking why it says what we say every Friday night, Vayachal Elokim bayom hashvi'i, on the seventh day God finished. Asks Rashi, God finished on the sixth day. The seventh day was the day of rest. He had finished everything already then. So the various answers that Chazal give, one of them is this. At that point, Friday afternoon, as Shabbos was coming in, what was missing in the world? Was the world indeed complete? Menucha. There wasn't menucha in the world. But Shabbos was menucha. When Shabbos came in, the concept of menucha was introduced to the world. The concept of rest was introduced to the world. The nigmaru amlocha. With that, the work ended. We've spoken about this Chazal before, and we'll speak about it in Yiddish Hashem again in the future. All that we need here for the purpose of our discussion is Rabbi Yeruchim's concept. And he says, this is very strange. And was there no menucha before? The animals had been created already. And if Shabbos wasn't brought in, wouldn't they sleep? Wasn't there night time? Were the animals incapable of taking a rest under a tree in the heat of the day? Did Shabbos have to be introduced so that an animal could take a rest on Friday or on Thursday or on Wednesday? And if there wouldn't have been Shabbos, had the Ribbono Shel Olam stopped there, so we wouldn't have had a Shabbos, it would have been a terrible thing. But would there have been no menucha in the world? Would it have been impossible to rest? Surely not. Says Rabbi Yeruchim, you see how far our definition of menucha is from God's definition. We would have thought to ourselves, had the Ribbono Shel Olam stopped the creation there, that we had everything. We have menucha as well. If you want to rest, you can lie down and rest. You want to go on holiday, you can go on holiday. You want to relax, you can relax. So we would have thought the world was finished. I heard about menucha, we would say, this is menucha. When I come home at night and I put my feet on a stool and I put the back of my chair in a reclining position and I lift up the newspaper, I'm relaxing, there's menucha. That's what we think is menucha, says the Chazal. There was no menucha at that point. Shabbos would introduce the concept of menucha. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam calls menucha. Menucha is not doing nothing. Menucha is not relaxing. Menucha is Shabbos. A completely different type of involvement. So we see how far our concepts are from the Ribbono Shel Olam's. And unless we study the Ribbono Shel Olam's concepts, we don't really understand the true reflections as they come down. What we call menucha is an aberration of the concept of menucha. That's all. It's a distortion of the concept of menucha. If we wouldn't have the Torah, we would think of Mishpatim. Our attendee spoke last night about Mishpatim, laws, social laws for the smooth running of a society. So we would think, what are Mishpatim? We would think like the laws which the Goyim run the country with. That's Mishpatim. It's only when we see the Torah and we learn what the Ribbono Shel Olam calls Mishpatim, the level of meticulousness and the obligations of one individual to another, that we realize that what we thought was Mishpatim is nothing. It's expediency. What we thought was law is really politics. I don't hurt you so that you don't hurt me. That's not what Mishpatim is. Mishpatim is a completely different concept. But we only understand that when we learn it in the Torah. Love. What we think, we understand what love is. You learn the first pasuk of the Shema, and you see, V'yahavta is Hashem Elokecha. What does V'yahavta mean? B'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol me'edecha. Love is self-sacrifice. How much self-sacrifice in that particular instance? In the mitzvah of V'yahavta is Hashem Elokecha, it has to be total self-sacrifice. with all your money, with your life if necessary, with all your emotions and thoughts. Complete self-sacrifice, that's our. So maybe one doesn't always love to that extent, but at least one understands by learning that pasuk what the concept of Ahava is. When the Torah says, "Ve'ahavta to l'recha kamoicha," one understands what Ahava means. It means self-sacrifice. And today we find people who fall in love and they set up a home without self-sacrifice. We live together without obligations to one another. You shouldn't feel meshubed to me. You shouldn't feel that you have any responsibility to me. And I have no responsibility to you. Doesn't work, we walk out. What is that? It's an aberration of Ahava. It's an aberration of love. Love is exactly the opposite. Ahava is complete self-sacrifice. And here they design expressions of love created to exclude the only essential ingredient of love, self-sacrifice. So they found a way of expressing their love without self-sacrifice. That means love without love. That's what it is. So we use a concept and we use a term and it's become so distorted that we don't know what it is anymore. And unless we study what Ahava is in the Torah, what the Ribbono Shel Olam's Ahava, what the source of that emotion really is, we'll end up with an aberration of the concept. There's one exception to that, where you can't study the Ribbono Shel Olam in order to understand what it is done here. That's in the area of emunah, an area of trust. The Sedra opens the Hoyo Ekev Tishmu Nes Amishpotim Oele, and it will be in the word Ekev is used, which figuratively means, or not literally means, as a result of, as Unkelus translates, the Yehei Chalaf, in return for. But literally the word Ekev means an ankle, a heel. Hoyo Ekev Tishmu Nes Amishpotim Oele, and it will be in return for keeping these mitzvahs. Will keep the covenant and the promise which he said, etc. Says the Ramban, why does it use the word Ekev in for the meaning of, and it will be in return for keeping the mitzvahs? Why the word Ekev? Says the Ramban, because the word Ekev implies time Ekev schar be'acharis, reward be'acharis, eventually, right at the end. The Ekev is right at the end of the body. And he says Rosh means at the beginning, and Ekev is at the opposite of Rosh. Bereshis, the Torah starts Bereshis at the beginning, the word Rosh at the beginning. Ekev is the opposite, at the end. When will you get Schar? At the end. So when are we really going to see the Ribbono Shel Olam in all his emunah? A person comes to you and says, you know the famous saying, a fellow meets a little girl and likes the little girl and says, she has a sixpence, when you're older give me a telephone call and I'll marry you. And 20 years later she goes to the public telephone, it's no longer a sixpence, but she adds a little bit of her own in as well, and she calls him and he says, oh yeah, he remembers, he's coming over to propose to her, and he marries her and they live happily ever after. Only then is the emunah expressed. Until then, does she really trust him? Does she really know? She doesn't know. Maybe not. Maybe it was a joke. Maybe it wasn't. She doesn't know what to think. It's only ba'acharis. When she finally sees it being done, then she knows that all this time she could have trusted him. Then she's amazingly impressed with him. Yes, I said I would. I shall. With the Ribbono Shel Olam, we know and we believe and we feel that he will and he will and he will. But where we're really going to see it with absolute clarity and understand the extent of that emunah, it's Ekev. The acharis is going to be right at the end. Ron Ozen. To understand this is going to be the acharis, it's going to be right at the end. I told you before the story of the two ladies who were going on a very hot summer's day to collect some tzedakah for Achnosos Kala. There was a Kala who was getting married and she had no money. Not to buy a wedding dress, not to buy a trousseau, not to pay for the chasana. So two elderly ladies undertook to go around collecting stock, and they went from house to house collecting whatever they could. After hours of this work, they come to the house and there'd been many disappointments. People weren't at home, people couldn't see them. And there's a little house just off the street with six steps leading up to the house. And the one lady says to the younger one, please, she says, Rachel, do me a favor. Just go out and knock on the door. If they're there, I'll come, I'll join you, so that I don't have to walk up the steps and down the steps again. So Rachel says, sure, she goes and knocks on the door. There's nobody there. She comes down and they go to the next house. These two ladies were very friendly and they had a deal. This is a deal which many people have in days gone by, but not so long gone by, made and managed to somehow fulfill. Whoever of us dies first should come to the other one and tell what goes on up there. So the younger one died first. Sorry, the elder one died first. And she came to Rochel in a dream. Oh, she says, tell me what it's like over there. She says, there aren't words that you'll understand that I can explain it. It's just not possible for me to communicate. But I made a promise to you that I would tell you. So I'll try and give you some kind of picture. No, I'm sorry, it's the younger one who died. It's Rochel who died. She said, I'll try and give you some kind of picture. Do you remember years ago, the two of us went out collecting money for a kallah? She says, yes, I remember. She says, the schar, the reward I got for walking up those 6 stairs, although there was nobody there, is more than you can possibly imagine in any kind of physical term. Now figure it out. I can't describe to you. I can just tell you that for that, the reward was beyond anything you're capable of imagining. Can you imagine the emunah and the Ribbono Shel Olam then? Of course, that's no longer called emunah. You don't have to be a maimin then. Then you see it. But it's the confirmation of that trust. That nothing is forgotten. That nothing goes without being paid for. Every bit of effort, I walked up 6 steps without result. I didn't get anything out of it. I had to go back there again. The walking up those 6 steps, just the tircha of those 6 steps, which I didn't even feel, I was a young woman, it wasn't difficult for me. But even that, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't forget. And the schar for every step, and we talk about schar halicha. It's brought in the halacha, actually, that if one has the choice of going to two shuls, it's talking obviously where one's in a strange town and one knows, owes no particular allegiance to any one shul. Nor is anyone better than the other, nor is the nusach better than. There's no reason to go to one rather than the other. There are two shuls. Brought in halacha, you should go to the further one, to the one that's further away, because you've got more schar halicha. You're walking, there's more effort involved. You're going further to go to shul, there's more schar halicha. Do you know what it is? When the Ribbono Shel Olam will come and will start making cheshbonos upstairs, and he will add up the number of footsteps that you walk to shul each day of your life. And tell you the exact number of footsteps. And one day you went this way, and one day you went this way, and schar for every step called psio, psio. Do you know what emunah that is? That's emunah in the Ribbono Shel Olam. But when are we really going to be confronted with that kind of emunah? Ba'achris hayomim, at the end, Akif. It's a long time away. So how are we, if we're going to try and understand trustworthiness? We can't study God's trustworthiness and say that's pshat in trust. Like what God says about Shabbos is menucha. Mishpatim is law, is a legal system. Emunah, what is emunah? That's going to be a long time before we can find out what emunah is. It's for that reason that the Midrash says the following on today's Seder. May emunosoi shel basar v'dam, as a result of the trustworthiness of human beings, at Yodea Emunosu Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can get a glimpse of what the trustworthiness of the Ribbono Shel Olam is. It's exactly the opposite. Normally you have to study God's midas in order to understand what we're supposed to do down here. Medrash says when it comes to Emunah, when it comes to really knowing and understanding the extent of God's trustworthiness, you've got to study people, and then you'll understand. And the Medrash brings a famous story. Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Shimon ben Shotach, shelokach chamor echod miYishmael echod. There was an occurrence with Rabbi Shimon ben Shotach, who took one donkey, who bought one donkey from one Arab. And if you think the Arabs are bad today, they were worse in those days. Holchu Talmidov. So the purchase was made, and the Talmidim took delivery of the donkey and were going to take the donkey to the stables. Umotzu boy even achas toivot luyeloi betzavori. and they saw around its neck a precious stone. Omrulu, they said to him, Rebbe, Birkas Hashem Itashi. Can you believe it? What the Ribbono Shalom is doing for you. You buy a donkey and you land up with a gold mine. Incredible. Baruch Hashem, look what's happened. You're now independent. You can open yeshivas. You can increase the number of your talmidim. You can print your sforim. There's no end to what we can do now. And how the Ribbono Shalom will benefit. How Torah will benefit. Clearly the Ribbono Shalom wants you to be a wealthy man. It's min hashamayim. Omar lehem Rabbi Shimon ben Shatach. Rabbi Shimon ben Shatach said, Chamoyer lokachti, even toivo loy lokachti. I bought a donkey, I didn't buy a diamond. Holach ve'erziru loyse yishmoyeli. He took the diamond and took it back to the Arab. We are certainly talking in a case where the Arab would never have known that where the diamond was. Certainly. Because if the Arab would have known, there would have been now, have a minute in the Talmudim that you don't take it back. There could have been Chilul Hashem. Certainly you'd have had to take it back. The whole Chiddush was that he had no real obligation to take it back. Clearly the Arab didn't know where it was. And it would seem that it has the din of an Aveda, of lost property. And strictly speaking, according to the Halacha, the lost property of a non-Jew, if there's no Chilul Hashem involved, one isn't obliged to go looking for him to return it. The Korah Olav, not Rabbi Shimon ben Shaddach, he takes it and he gives it back. The Korah Olav Isa Yishmael, what did the Arabs say? Baruch Hashem Elokei Shimon ben Shaddach. Oh, he says, praise be the God of Shimon ben Shaddach. Doesn't say praise be Shimon ben Shaddach. Doesn't say thank you. He says, praise the God of Shimon ben Shaddach. Why? Because he understands that what Shimon ben Shaddach did is unnatural and abnormal. That's not normal human behavior. It's madness. It's meshuggah. I once had a shayla from somebody who had been allocated by the computer in his company 3 weeks more leave than was due to him. So that's how it's, each month they should get a printout of their statement of account. And among the things he saw that they'd credited him with more leave than he was due to him. So we discussed it. I said, what will happen if you go and you'll say, this is not due to me, I can't take it? He said, they'll think I'm mad. They'll probably fire me as a madman. I'll probably lose my job. They'll think I'm so crazy. It's the same kind of thing there. The Arab must have thought, Shimon, Shatter. That's not how a human being behaves. There's no reason for him to behave like that. There's no obligation for him to behave like that. I wouldn't do it to him, and he knows I wouldn't do it to him. He could have got away with it, and nobody would ever have known the difference. What is there in human conduct which requires such behavior? On what basis? Therefore, there's nothing to thank Shimon ben Shaddach for. Because Shimon ben Shaddach didn't do it himself. Shimon ben Shaddach did it because he has a Ribbono Shel Olam over him. That's what the Arab was able to perceive. That this is a difference between a code of ethics which is dictated by a Ribbono Shel Olam. And he's behaving in a godly way here, not an individual. It says, the Medrash, from the trustworthiness of a human being, you can see the trustworthiness of the Ribbono Shel Olam. You'll go upstairs, and the Ribbono Shel Olam will take a diamond and he'll say, this is yours. Say, my goodness, I've forgotten about it today. It's for that extra step you took when you went to shul. That day that your car broke down and you had to walk. Remember? You walked 782 footsteps. For that, this is your schar. And he'll say, Ribbono Shel Olam, I'd forgotten about it. Had you not paid me for it, it would never have entered my mind that there's something left out. I didn't expect anything for it. I took it for granted. Took it for granted. Chamoy lokachti, even teva loy lokachti. That's not that is due to you. It's your effort. You put it in. It belongs to you. I've kept it all these years. I've been waiting for the opportunity to give it to you. Nothing gives me more nachas than being able to give it to you. The emunah of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam. But where do we see that? When we see a human being behaving with godly trust. Then you realize how far the trust of the Ribbono Shel Olam goes. Because where does Shimon ben Shaddach get it from? He gets it from a koyach, a godly ability that he has. The Medrash tells another story. In the Gemara in Yerushalmi, in the beginning of Dumai, there are a number of stories of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoir. And these are stories that everybody needs to learn through, and learn with their wives and with their children. The Medrash brings a few of them here. Maaseh b'Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoir. Shehoyo dar beir achas bedore. He was living in a certain city in the south. Beholchu anoshim lihisparnei shom. And men went there on business. It used to be a place where people used to go on business. And two men went. Vehoyu biyodon shtei soin shol soirin. There were two soin of barley. Exactly how much a so is, I don't know of him, but it's a fairly large measurement of barley which they had purchased or had tried to sell unsuccessfully. Whatever it is, they had it there. Vehifkidu etzle. They came to Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. And they said, we would like you to ask you to be a shomer chinam. You should, if you'll agree, look after our two measures of barley. We need to leave the town. We can't take it with us. If you would look after it for us. V'shochach lo'isam. And they forgot about it. V'holchu lo'in, and they disappeared. So here Shimon ben Shata, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyer is left, holding two so'o of barley. And the owners have disappeared. He doesn't know who they are, where they are. They've gone, and he looks for them in the town. They've left the town. What did he do? V'hoyo Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoir. What was his halachic obligations, firstly? His halachic obligations would probably have been to sell them at the best price available, and to put the money in an interest-bearing account, and pay the money when they come. That's about as much as he would have had to do. V'hoyo Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoir zorea oison b'chol shono, year after year. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoir, who was a poor man, a busy man, talmidim, learning to do, teaching to do, every year he took the barley and he planted it. V'oiso oison goyren, and he used to wait and nurture it, water it, harvest it, and take it into the silos and wait for a year. And still nobody would come, and he would take everything that he had from the previous year and go and plant. Can you imagine this old man walking and planting year after year barley which doesn't belong to him? Achasheva shonim, this went on for 7 years of planting and reaping. Holcho isom achaverim l'sham, those people went to him, litva isom, litain le. So they remembered where it was and they came to fetch their two saw of barley. Miyad hikiru isom Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoir. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoir immediately recognized them. What does that imply? They didn't recognize him. A, he's had 7 years of hard work. He probably aged a lot during that period. And secondly, they never knew him so well to start with. And thirdly, it implies that he could have gotten away with it. Yeah, come and fetch it. If you know who I am and where I am. They didn't know. He noticed them. Omar, we went to them, boyu tli yotru sechem, he says, come and fetch your treasures. And they came and they saw this wealth which had accumulated during the 7 years. Having done all that, having worked all that, was he obliged to give them all the 7 years worth of produce now? He could have given them two so and told them to go. No, he gives them all that they've made, that has been produced from it. Hare me emunosu shel bosu vado mata yodea emunosu shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You think that you'll come up to the Ribbono Shel Olam and he's going to pay you for a mitzvah that you did 50 years ago in the terms that you envisaged 50 years ago. That's what one thinks. So like, imagine I take 80 years ago, 70 years ago, an old man today lent a pound to a chaver, to a friend, and disappears, and they get together again 70 years later. What do you think the Ribbono Shel Olam does? Like the friend would do, oh, I borrowed a pound from you. Sorry, there's an issue of ribus, one can't pay anybody interest in that, otherwise I'm sure they would be interested. Here's a pound. So thank you very much. It's amazing that you remembered. You'd be very, very impressed that the Leva even remembered it 70 years ago that you borrowed a pound from me. It's not like that with the Ribbono Shel Olam. When we'll come upstairs, that mitzvah that we did 50 years ago will have been planted and harvested. And planted and harvested and planted and harvested, and we'll get the schar of years and years and years of interest at current interest rates, not at interest rates 5 years ago. 2% above prime. That's how we're going to get paid off. Year over year, cloud backing. A mitzvah doesn't lie fallow. That's the trustworthiness of the Ribbono Shel Olam. You see, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoir, he's not obligated to do it, and God isn't obligated to do it, except in as much as he wants to be somebody that can be trusted. somebody that can be trusted absolutely. That's the common line with Rabbi Shimon ben Shotach and Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyer, both of them going far beyond what halacha requires of them, what Jewish law requires of them. Why? So that there should be never any question about my trustworthiness. That you should know that however well you could have done yourself with the barley, I did for you. You've lost nothing by leaving it with me. There's no way that you can accuse me of anything, of neglecting your interests in any possible way. Emuno, trustworthiness, trust and trustworthiness, is one of the most essential ingredients of any society, and it's the ingredient which today doesn't exist. In fact, it was the Chofetz Chaim who predicted the Great Depression before it came. He said, business is built on trust. That's what it is. A pound note, a rand note, is trust. You trust that the government somewhere has the money to back that rand. Otherwise, it's a meaningless piece of paper. Unless you deal in gold, unless you actually transfer gold one to another, one's dealing in trust. A check is trust. A business contract is trust. The Chofetz Chaim already saw that there was no emuno ben odom lemokum. People were already losing their trust in God. And he said, if they don't trust God anymore, certainly they don't trust each other. And if they don't trust each other, business can't work. And there's going to be a recession, a terrible recession. That means people are promising more than they've got. People are suspecting that they're being promised more than they've got. Comes the day where everybody's going to call in their debts out of fear, and there won't be any money to repay. We're getting into exactly the same situation now. A situation where the third world has borrowed from America money which it owes. It has no hope of paying it back. It doesn't have with what to pay it back. So it writes, IOU. So they write an IOU for $1 billion, and an American bank regards that $1 billion as an asset, and some innocent, naive old lady takes her pension money and buys shares in that American bank, because after all, they look at their assets. Comes one day when the Americans are going to say, I don't trust you people, third world anymore. Call in the debts, pay up. When that happens, the old lady is going to say, I don't trust this bank anymore, sell my shares. And the other old lady who's put in her savings into that same bank is also going to say, I don't trust anymore. And where's the money going to come from? Lemaisa, living in inflationary times, means we are all writing checks without money to pay for it. That's what it means. We're buying things that we don't have money for. And we just hope that by the time anybody asks us for the money, we'll get money. How are we going to get the money? Because we'll borrow from somebody else. And so it goes and goes. There comes a time where Chas v'Sholom, we're leading, Western society is leading for exactly what happened in the late 1920s. A complete collapse of a monetary system based on what? Lack of emuna. People are beginning not to trust one another because they see how it's operating. People are making promises they cannot fulfill. People are borrowing without any hope of being able to repay. Comes a major question of trust. In Torah, trust is even more important. We learned emunas chachomim. What happens if I don't trust Moshe Rabbeinu 100%? If I think Moshe Rabbeinu is capable, not of lying, chas v'shalom, but if I think Moshe Rabbeinu is capable of telling me something inaccurate because he's forgotten something, the whole Torah ceases to exist. Because he got it from the Ribbono Shel Olam and he came down and taught it. And if I suspect that he could have taught it wrong, it's finished, that's it. And if I think that my Rosh Yeshiva and my Rabbeim could have taught me wrong, if I suspect that they're the kind of people that could distort out of forgetfulness, never mind deliberately, but Torah is gone. That means I have to question and doubt the validity of everything I've learned. If there's no trust, there's no authority. In Hebrew, the two words are the same. Samchus is an authority. Lismoch means to rely on somebody. An authority is somebody you can rely on. Relying on him means you trust him. You trust that he will deliver the goods he's promised. And if there's any doubt about that, if one feels I'm not so sure that he can deliver the goods that he's promised, maybe he's promised more than he's capable of delivering, finish, the whole system collapses. Just as if you write me a check and I fear that you might have written more than you're capable of paying up, the thing is not worth anything. So an individual who says something of authority and the listener questions the validity and the accuracy, where is it? Where is it all from? We can't communicate with each other. We can't give each other information if one doesn't trust one another. There are two other stories the Medrash brings. In between the two stories that I gave you, and I'm going to do them both with you, they both concern Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah. There was another story with Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah. He went to a certain city and he found they were complaining that the mice and rats were eating the produce in that city. There was a terrible plague of mice and rats. And they came to ask him his advice. What should we do about it? What did Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah do? Omalahin, he said to them, clearly you're not taking maaser properly from the food. The food is not being properly prepared. And he saw the dubiousness in their minds. Is that what the maaser all about? Mevakshim atem shena'arev eschem? Do you want me to guarantee? I'll underwrite. Shem atem mafrishim maaser eschem keroi ein achborim oichlim oi. If you will take maaser properly, the rats will stop eating. I'll underwrite it. Omru lohen, they said yes. Irei vayson, he gave them a guarantee. You have my word? A guarantee from Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah means, if you do it, and the mice continue eating the produce, I'll pay up. That's what a guarantee means. Not just, I'll bet you it will go away. That's not what it means. And Arvus says, I take financial responsibility for all the produce in this town. If you keep your end of the bargain and you'll take the mice properly and the mice will carry on, I'll pay up. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah was an only merude. He was an unbelievable man of unbelievable poverty. Didn't have a penny. And the rats disappeared and they were never seen again. Another story. There was a man whose mitzvah used to be that he used to sink boreholes. He used to provide water for people. I don't know if that was his panosa. Probably it was. The way he earned a living was sinking boreholes. His daughter was once going down the road, and she came to a river that she had to pass. But shot for, and the river pushed her aside and she drowned. I said to Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah, you should know that the daughter of so and so has disappeared in the river. Amr Luhu, he said to them, Iefsha, that's not possible. The courage of the man to make a statement like that, Iefsha, can't be. He was doing God's will with water. God wouldn't kill his daughter in water. You tell me that she was run over by a motor car? Could be. You tell me she fell off a building? Could be. You tell me she drowned? Impossible. Iefsha. All of a sudden they hear people shouting and screaming, Bosa bita shel pleni, look, here she comes. Omru Rabbi Seinu, our rabbi said, Kivan she'omer Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah kach, since Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah said that, the moment he said, Iefsha, it can't be, Yorad malach ve'helo oiso, an angel came down and pulled her out of the river. That's an amazing midrash. But what does these two medrashim got to do with the first two? The medrash is bringing four stories to illustrate the principle that me'emunosoi shel boso v'dom at yodea emunosoi shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That from the trustworthiness of human beings you can learn about the trustworthiness of God. That's what the medrash starts with, and that's what it ends with. And it first brings the story of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah and the two saw of Bali. And then it brings the two stories we've just learned, and it ends with the story of the Arab and the donkey and Rabbi Shimon ben Shotach. So the first story and the last story, I understand. Rabbi Shimon ben Shotach, we see, he wants to be trusted absolutely. He returns the stone. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah wants to be trusted absolutely. He plants the wheat every year for 7 years. I understand. Emunoso shel boso v'dav, from the trustworthiness of a human being, hat lomed at Yudea Emunosu Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can understand the Emunah of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But what have the middle two stories got to do with it? Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoel saying that the reason that the rats are eating is because you're not taking ma'aser properly. When he's told that this girl is drowned in the river, he says, "Eefsha." What's that going to do with the whole thing? Achrayus, to take a responsibility, is an amazing chutzpah in a sense. If I write a check, which basically means I undertake to pay you on demand 100 rand, it's an amazing chutzpah. Who knows I'll be able to? How can I make such an undertaking? Who knows what might happen between the time that I write that check and the time you go to the bank to cash that check? What gives me the right to do such a thing? A doctor comes and says, sees a sick patient, takes responsibility to fix the patient, undertakes an operation, puts the patient on a table, gives the patient an anesthetic, which is dangerous, takes a knife and cuts the patient open. Who says that he's going to be successful? Who says he's going to survive, that he's going to live long enough to finish the operation? Who says he might not drop dead in the middle? What gives us the courage to undertake responsibility? The answer is, it depends who's undertaking. Most of us, what gives us the courage? Because we don't regard it as a responsibility. You'll take the check to the bank and the check will bounce. You'll phone me, I'll give you a story, I'll write you another check, you'll deposit it again. We'll dray out of that one when the time comes. That's it. We don't take it that seriously. The doctor puts under anesthetic and opens up. The patient dies. That's also, it happens. It's normal. And it can't be successful every one of the times. It's no taina against me personally. It's not that I'm guaranteeing success. Mostly we don't regard it as responsibility. We don't create within us the need of trustworthiness, that somebody has to know that when I say so, it will be done. Because if we really lived with that I want to know that anybody can trust me on anything, then I've got to know that I dare not fail once. Because if I failed once, chas v'sholom, until I do tshuva, anybody's entitled to say, "Look, I trusted you that time, look what you did. Must I trust you again a second time? Must I give you a second chance?" Until the person has done tshuva, one's entitled to be disappointed. But we're not worried about that, because we don't take our obligations as obligations. With a Godel B'Yisrael, it's not like that. A Godel B'Yisrael realizes that if he writes a check and the check bounces, his whole Torah becomes suspect. You said on the 1st of January, I will pay you 100 rand. On the 2nd of January, I took the check to the bank and they didn't pay me 100 rand. You therefore are a liar. I can't rely on you. I can't trust you. You said you would and you didn't. And when you said that your Rebbe taught you such and such and I believed you, am I now to believe that he really did teach you that? And when you paskin the halacha for me and I did as you paskin, am I really entitled to believe that you paskin correctly? When you said you would pay 100 rand, you didn't pay? The whole Torah ceases to exist. A God will be Israel, and theoretically every time with Chochem, every Ben Torah can't afford for a check to bounce. He can't afford to say, you know, it's going to rain tomorrow. Comes tomorrow, it doesn't rain. But you said it was going to rain tomorrow. A man can make a mistake. A Ben Torah, a link in the line of tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu down to generations to come, can't make a mistake. We're setting very high standards here. These are standards that one can aspire to. None of us are holding there. We must all be careful, not to become terribly disillusioned with ourselves and guilt-ridden, and B, not to become too quickly disillusioned with others. But as I've said often, the purpose of these shiurim is to describe Torah not as it's practiced, but as it needs to be practiced, the direction towards which we need to strive. And this is the direction to which we need to strive. A child has to know that he can trust the father. A student has to know that he can trust the teacher. An individual has to know that he can trust his friend. And the moment there's a let down in trust, there is no second chance. It's the one thing in which there's no second chance, and everything else there's second chances. But not in trust. And this is an onus. The man says, "Look, when I wrote it out to you, I had the money, there was an onus, the bank made a mistake, something happened, I'm sorry, I'll do tshuva, I'll fix it up with you, it'll never happen again." That there can be. But if it happens out of carelessness, out of a lack of care at the time of making the undertaking, then you don't get a second chance. So how does a Talmid Chacham have the chutzpah to undertake responsibility? How does he? To paskin a shayla, to give advice. Never mind to do what Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyed did. If you'll take my food, the rats will go. Where did he get that? Do you realize what a risk it is? If the rats don't go, that's the end of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyed. They tell him that the girl is drowned, and he says, E-F-sha. If they find her body in the river an hour later, that's the end of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyed. Why put your head on the block? Why commit yourself like that? How can you commit yourself like that? People sometimes wonder why the Gedolei Yisrael speak very carefully and are very reluctant to say something which is very committal. This is the reason. Specifically about mistakes in trust. That means an undertaking which when you made the undertaking you were not 100% sure you could fulfill. There's nothing wrong with the Talmid Chacham saying, I passed on the Shaila yesterday and I'm sorry, I made a mistake, I'm chozer. There's nothing wrong with that. It's the correct thing to do and it happens inevitably. There's nothing wrong in somebody saying, I gave you advice yesterday, please ignore it, forget it, it's wrong, this is the reason that it's wrong, this is the reason I made a mistake. There's nothing wrong in a father telling a child, I told you something yesterday, I was wrong, I wasn't aware of something. It has to be done another way. We're talking about trust. We're talking about making an undertaking which is not or cannot be delivered. The answer we see in these midrashim. Omru Rabbi Seinu, the rabbi said, Kiven shomer Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyed, kach yorad malach v'heilo iso. She was in the river. At the very moment that Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyed was saying E-F-sha, she was in the river struggling for her life and would have drowned a moment later. But because Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyed said E-F-sha, the Ribbono Shel Olam sends an angel and pulls her out. Tzadik goizel v'akadosh baruch hu mekayim. A tzadik decrees and the Ribbono Shel Olam fulfills. What does that mean? Do the tzadikim run the world? A tzadik can make a decree and God binds himself by their decree? Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyed says, E-F-sha, and God sends an angel to undo what just has taken place? The answer is yes. Why? I used to work for a very outstanding company. That company today doesn't exist anymore. They recently went out of business. And the fact that they went out of business is what one of the things that prompted me to say what I said a few minutes ago. That by the looks of things, we're heading for an economic disaster in the Western world. Why? They were old fashioned. They had certain ways of doing business which don't work anymore. One of the ways of doing business was that if the tea boy signed a contract for $1 billion, they would deliver. It's not for the other person to know that the tea boy isn't authorized to sign contracts. It's exactly the opposite to the way people work today. Today, you sign a contract with a director of a company or a manager of a company, and when they can't deliver, they get their legal team to work out a way to show that at the time of the signing of the contract, he was not authorized to sign. Some little dray, some document wasn't written, some minutes of the meeting hadn't been documented, some technical detail they'll find to get out of it. So where can you trust? Person signs a receipt for something, or he signs a contract. Do I have to go looking through all the minutes of all their management meetings to see that at this point he has authority to sign? I trust. One can't trust anymore, because be sure as you want to. If they want to get out of it, that's the first way they're going to do it. Look who signed. They don't work for us anymore, and even when they worked for us, they weren't authorized to sign such things. Why didn't you get the managing director to sign? That's the way it's done. Lack of trust. This company had a principle, no matter who. Yes, they were formally, they had, as one supposed to have, who may sign and who may not sign. But it made no difference. And that was put into practice. And there were times when unauthorized people committed the company to vast amounts of money. And it would have been the easiest thing to get out of it. And save the company. And save their personal wealth, which was very, very substantial. And on a few such instances, they had to go out of business. That's how they operated. There has to be trust. That they're not going to compromise. If my insistence on trust is going to leave me penniless, let me be penniless. but at least I'm a penniless person that always will be trusted. Nobody will ever question my word, and nobody will ever question my check. You know what a name that is to have in the business world? But it doesn't make money that way. When a tzaddik is gozer, let's say first, not a tzaddik is gozer. If you or I are gozer, we say it's going to rain tomorrow. It comes tomorrow and I see the clouds on coming. Now I'm worried. People are going to start saying this. Can't trust the man. He says it's going to rain. It's not raining. The Rebbeinu Shlom turns to me and says, what are you worried about? Is that the first time that you said something that hasn't been? Is that the first time that you made an undertaking which you knew you had no power to deliver? What power do you have over the rain? It's going to rain tomorrow. Who are you? But is it the first time you've done such a thing? No. And you got away with it because nobody expects anything more from you. They know that you're not trustworthy. They know that you say things in the heat of the moment which aren't going to be... So why should I make it rain? I must make a miracle to save you when you don't deserve it. A tzaddik comes along. Says it's going to rain tomorrow. The clouds aren't coming. Turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam, he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, I want you to know, I have never in my life once said something which I haven't delivered. I have never in my life undertaken something which I haven't done. This is going to be the first time. People will know it's not me who's not trustworthy. I said it in your name. I committed the company, Rebbe initially. You might say, no, I'm not authorized. But I did it. If the rain doesn't come, it's you who are not trustworthy. Tzaddik goyzer v'akadosh baruch hu mekayim. When a tzaddik signs a contract, the Ribbono Shel Olam backs it. That's the relationship between the Ribbono Shel Olam and a tzaddik. Hamz Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyer says he understands and he decrees and he's prepared to undertake financially to replace all the wheat that is destroyed by the rats if they in fact take Meisr and the rats persist. He knows tzaddik goyzer v'akadosh baruch hu mekayim. He understands the ways of the Ribbono Shel Olam well enough, and he understands people well enough and Torah well enough. He knows that never has he done anything which he's not been able to deliver. He knows the story of his own experience with the two bags of wheat which turned into fortunes of money through his own efforts, just so that nobody should be able to say you didn't do your duty, you didn't fulfill your obligations. Says Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoel, I've fulfilled my obligations and I've made a declaration to this town. Most of the food and the rats will go. Ribbono Shel Olam, the company is committed, you'd better deliver. And tzaddik goes about because Baruch Hu Mekayim, the Ribbono Shel Olam does. Yoshi, he says about the girl who's drowned, the Ribbono Shel Olam sends an angel and pulls the girl out of the river. What's Emunat Chachomim? Emunat Chachomim is the knowledge that when a Godel be Yisrael says something, it's not just that he's saying something that he has no authority over. Even if he says something that a normal human being would not have knowledge about. It's going to rain tomorrow, or it's not going to rain tomorrow. Or take your tefillin off your left hand and put it on your right hand. Whatever it is that he says. Tzaddik goyzer v'akadosh baruch hu mekayim. The reason you have to believe him is not only because he's trustworthy. But since he's trustworthy, you need to know that when he undertakes something in the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Ribbono Shel Olam will never let him down. And it needs to be some idiot who's going to hear a tzaddik say something and not shiver in his boots about it, being absolutely sure that is emes, that is correct, and that God stands behind that. That's emunas chachomim. That's belief in chachomim. And through the understanding of that emuna, one is able to come to an understanding of a hoyo ekev tishmu. When we see how our gedolei Yisrael operate, where we see the care with which they undertake and the inevitableness of their repayments, when one sees that every word they utter comes to fruition, then one has to know how much more so it is with the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, that he's ne'eman l'shalem schar, that he's trusted to be trusted 100% to pay for every little thing that we've done, reward for the mitzvahs and chas v'sholem punishment for the averus. Just as he didn't forget those six steps, he doesn't forget the little things that we do which shouldn't have been done. Nothing is forgotten. The schar is there, the reward is there, everything is meticulous, and that emuna, that belief, has to be projected from our interpersonal trust of one another into a magnified level of trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam.